Well, if your queue has seat belts, you might want to strap them on. Because the blessing and the curse of preaching through a book is that I don't really control what comes up next. And Proverbs 5 is one of those passages that it's about as practical as you can get. And Proverbs tends to be that way. And this is why we're in the book of Proverbs right now, is because we're kind of continuing this theme of we're called to make disciples, but the first call then is to be disciples. And so we need some practical tools for being better disciples of Jesus. And so we're in Proverbs, at least for a while. And the problem is, as we read, I think especially in Proverbs 5, we can pretty easily relegate this to the realm of being somebody else's problem. It doesn't apply to me. Well, for starters, the wise father here is speaking to his son. And so, women and girls, then you're off the hook, right? This doesn't apply to you. And older men might also be inclined to say, well, he's talking to his son. You know, this is obvious, this is for young men, so I'm off the hook too. And then as you get further into it, it could be argued that he's talking about, when he talks about this forbidden woman, he could be talking about a prostitute, or what we might term an easy or a loose woman. And so, yeah, that's easy to say, well, that's clearly somebody else's problem, because, man, we don't have those things in the church. Not usually. And if we do, they're definitely frowned upon. So, this really, we can kind of skip over this chapter, can't we? I would just like to say two things about that. Maybe it does address an issue that's not really a problem for you personally. But can I just say that it is a problem for a whole bunch of people in the church? Not just in the world, in the church, we have these problems. And as part of the church whose mission it is to make disciples, I think we all need to consider our own level of involvement in helping others. Maybe it's not your problem, but I think you still have a role in helping perhaps someone else with this. I think sadly the church has tended to turn a blind eye to the prevalence of this going on inside the church. Once in a while it comes up and, you know, some high up figure will be accused or caught in or just plain confess to these types of things, and it kind of gets the limelight and everyone's like, oh, how could this happen? But when it comes to just the rest of us, the regular folks, the laity, we can kind of ignore it and push it to the side. Man, we don't want to deal with this because it's so prevalent. We don't want to even talk about these things. So it doesn't receive the fanfare or the attention among the laity. Which leads to the second thing. I think sexual sins they're not something with which to be trifled. And they're not limited to the act itself or the acts related to that. The implications of this passage go way beyond just sleeping around. Way beyond that. So with all this in mind, we're going to march into the father's warning to his son regarding marital fidelity and sexual purity. Now, to the parents of small children, and since I have the majority of the small children, I'm speaking to myself and my wife, but there's a tendency to kind of say, well, let's give them something to occupy them so they're not really paying a lot of attention to this, because oftentimes we don't want to have to answer the questions that are going to come up when we talk about this stuff. Am I right? Am I right, Susan? Susan's like, I don't know if I don't want to deal with this, right? Because moms are going, man, what's he doing, right? And I think we need to not take that approach. Because this stuff is in front of us all the time. This week I was working out in the country on a roof, and so I had my radio going, trying to find out what's going on in the world, and oh my goodness, this was a horrible week. All of you that have been listening to or watching the news know, my land sakes, this was stuff you don't want kids listening to. Just the news. I was glad that I was there by myself and the kids weren't around. But the reality of it is, they're exposed to this stuff, especially if they're in school. They can't get away from it. It's on the bus, it's in the classroom, it's on the playground, it's everywhere they go. And so it's something that they're going to be facing. And so I think we need to address this. And so I'm going to ask the kids. Now speaking, there's what, about six kids in here right now. As tempting as it's going to be to draw and do other things, I want you to listen to this message today. I want you to especially listen to the words that Solomon wrote in Proverbs chapter 5. So you can all, adults included, turn to the book of Proverbs in the 5th chapter. And I don't know if we're going to get to read all of this today. There's a lot of stuff in this passage. I'm at least going to deal with the first probably 10 verses or so of it. Because we need to address these facts. Certainly amongst our young people, but also amongst our adults. We all need to be thinking about these things. We certainly don't want our kids to find themselves in the shoes of the young man described in this passage, who lacked wisdom and fell into the trap of misplaced sexual passion, which is ironically what we've been hearing about this whole week, right, in the news? That's what's been at the forefront of everyone's attention. And it's an easy trap in which to fall. And I would scream it to all youth and children if I could. Like Solomon, however, I know it's the voice of the father to his children that carries the most weight. It's the actions of the parents, it's the words of the parents that influence kids way more than the pastor or the youth pastor or the Sunday school teacher or any other well-meaning and well-desiring Christian in the church who's trying their best to teach these kids. It falls on the parents. And so, knowing that the majority of the kids in this audience this morning actually belong to me, I'm speaking as a father to my kids, but I'm also speaking as a pastor to my church. And a youth pastor to some of the other kids. So it falls on grandparents and parents to teach young children these things, because they're getting it. They're not just going to get it, they are getting it somewhere. Guaranteed, they're getting a whole bunch of this garbage. And they're not getting it from a biblical perspective, which is why our culture is shifting so quickly against what God's Word says. So it falls on us to teach these principles, not just in word, but also, and I think more importantly, in practice. This is in essence what the first two verses of Proverbs 5 bespeak. It says, verses 1 and 2, "My son, be attentive to my wisdom, incline your ear to my understanding, that you may keep discretion and your lips may guard knowledge." So listen up. I have three sons here. I can say, "My son, listen up." Solomon says, "My son, listen up. I'm about to give you some really good stuff here that will save your life." And here it is, verse 3. "For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps follow the path to Sheol. She doesn't ponder the path of life. Her ways wander, and she does not know it. Beware the forbidden woman. Now, he only gives two things here, you'll notice, that are positive things, kind of, about this woman. Two things that are appealing about this woman. The lips that drip honey. It's an apt description of the way in which this forbidden woman appeals to the sexual appetite of the man. And I don't need to go into a lot of these, any detail about the ways in which this works out. There's any number of ways in which certain women, both in person and virtually, by the way, portray themselves erotically. Like dripping honey. Looks so good. She doesn't even have to say anything to stir these things up. But if she does, boy, it seals the deal. And her words would make it seem even more seemingly irresistible. And whereas there are only two things about this woman that attract men, there's a hidden aspect lying under the surface that can't be seen. And note how much more focus he has on these things. Look at the list. He says the end will be bitter if you pursue her. Bitter! Of course, you don't see that. All you see is the dripping honey and the smooth oil words. The end will be destructive as a sword. Boy, that destructive. This was. That is the key word there. Destructive. She leads to death. And in fact, leads to Sheol, or hell. Her way is not a way that leads to fulfillment, as it may seem. It is, in fact, quite the opposite. So don't go this way. And the last thing to me is probably the most interesting thing. And that is that she seems to be somehow self-deceived. She's wandering aimlessly, unaware of her own folly. How sad. These are the markings of a forbidden woman. But you don't see them, because all you see is the dripping honey and the smooth oil. That's all you see. So you don't be looking for these things, because you're not going to see them. If you're thinking, well, I'll be looking for these things and that'll warn me, this is the forbidden woman. That is not the way it works. You see the dripping honey. Man, that looks good. So why would anyone go down this path that leads to all of these things? Obviously, I think men and boys need to be aware of the dangers of the seductive woman. She's like a beautiful ripe fruit that you just can't wait to have. But after he's eaten of it, he finds out that the fruit actually was poisoned and it leads to death. But it's too late. By the time he finds out, he's already in the trap. And that's why Solomon is screaming, "Don't do this." Now, while the warning is directed explicitly to the son, I think there's also an implicit warning to the woman here as well. Don't be distracted by her title of a forbidden woman, because I don't think it's always with malice or ill will that she leads men astray. Her own ignorance of what she's actually doing is very much in line with the man who blindly follows her, blindly pursues her. Both the man and the woman are ignorant of what's going on, but they're still both very much culpable for their actions. I'm reminded of the years that Melissa and I spent working with youth before we had our own kids, working with teenagers. we observed not just the boys being sucked into these traps, but the girls who laid them. I think the girls really, by and large, didn't really understand what they were doing. And here's why I would say that, because I think these girls, they were just looking for some love and some attention. They didn't really understand what was going on. They were wandering aimlessly, just like Solomon described to this woman. Just looking for some attention and some love that they couldn't get anywhere else. So the guys were more than happy to, get what they were looking for. And the girls felt good about it because they got what they thought they were looking for. Destruction for both of them always ensued, and usually a whole lot of other people as well that they didn't expect got involved and felt the destruction. This is the way it's always been. Always been. That's what was going on in Solomon's day. That's what goes on even still today. Now some of these teenagers we've seen, they've now grown up, they're adults. And some of them finally did realize the futility and the frustration in that lifestyle, and they've settled down. I wish I could say that was most of them. But regardless of whether they did or not, the consequences are still there. The consequences still haunt them of their foolish choices. And others still haven't figured out the problem. Many others. In fact, the evidence we see in our culture today is adults, even, by the way, elderly adults, who still don't understand what the big deal is. And the carnage in terms of destroyed lives is staggering. And no one even understands why. They have no clue what's going on. If only they would heed the warnings of Scripture. The warnings we're reading right now in Proverbs chapter 5. Every day there are new generations following this same pattern. And there have been since before Solomon wrote these words. And it's why he reiterates in verse 7. And now, O sons, listen to me, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Can you hear Solomon screaming it? Listen to me. Don't neglect this. This is a warning. I've seen this happen. I've seen the destruction that ultimately, inevitably ensues because of this. This is a message that still needs to be screamed from the rooftops. And I think that's exactly what Solomon is doing here. Every father needs to warn his son. Every mother, her daughter. And grandparents and uncles and aunts and other Christians who see this coming, especially within the family, need to send this warning out to the young folks. Of course, that assumes that those who are teaching it are also living it out, because you can't teach it if you're not living it. And I think that's where the real problem comes in the church. Because so many adults are not living this out, they can't teach it. And so they understand that, so they don't. And so we have generations now, even within the church, who don't understand the ramifications. And this is a very real temptation. And it remains a temptation. I keep talking about youth, kids that are facing this temptation, but in reality of it is, it doesn't go away when we become adults. It's not just for the kids, it's for us too.